Happy Sabbath, everyone. What a great Sabbath day God has given us today. It's beautiful outside, just absolutely beautiful. I can see the whole outside from where I'm sitting right here. Well, first of all, Anna and I want to thank you very much, thanking everyone who has prayed for her Anna's severe chest pains that she had some 5 weeks ago. She walked about a block and a half at that time, and I had to take her to the emergency room in the hospital. She was there about 8 hours. And today she can walk about a mile with some caution and no pain whatsoever. So thank you so very, very much. Very much. She is recuperated incredibly. I can't believe it. She's back to normal, basically. Well, the title of my message is Our Tongue, Our Mouth, and Our Words. When these three words are added together in scripture, they total over 1,000 times, 1,000 times that they appear in the Bible. To God, our words are important. They're having power, they have influence, and they also have consequences for us, as we shall soon see. Now, much of my message is taken from Mr. Segley's Bible study, Our Awesome Bible. It is Bible study number 37. Did you know that he spent nearly 17 years on bringing this Bible study to us from January the 2nd of 02? Well, maybe it was a little bit later, I'm not sure, to September of 018, from 02 to 018. And in this Bible study number 37, he lists 10 places where words alone become big problems. We're going to start off in Proverbs 26 and verse 22. Proverbs 26 and verse 22, Solomon is saying here that the words of a gossip, the words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down to a man's innermost parts. In verse 28, he's talking about a tongue. He says, a lying tongue hates those it hurts, and a flattering mouth works ruin. Chapter 27, verse 1, he says, don't boast. He said, don't boast about tomorrow, for you don't know what a day may bring forth. Verse 2, he says, don't praise yourself either. Don't brag, don't praise, don't have pride about where you've been and what God has blessed you with. Let another praise you and not your own mouth, someone else and not your own lips. Well, in Matthew 37, Christ is criticized. He's criticized here for healing a demon-possessed man. He's criticized by the Pharisees. And of anybody who should know better, the Pharisees should have. They were his ministers of the day. Verse 37, he says, by your words you'll be acquitted, and by your words you'll be condemned. You'll be either innocent or guilty. And in verse 36, what does Christ say about your words? Here's what he says. I tell you that men will have to give account on the day of judgment, on the day of judgment for every careless word they have spoken. Talks about every idle word, every empty word, every worthless word. We're going to have to give account for our words, not just our actions. God shows his great power against Egypt versus his great love for Israel. And this is in the book of Exodus. The firstborn of Egypt die, and a great miracle for Israel. No one dies in Israel. Everyone heard of the crying and the wailing of the Egyptians, but nobody in Israel died at all. They stayed inside, and the blood of the lamb over their houses prevailed, and they were not injured, hurt, dead, or any of that type of thing. And they should have been able to see that, plus the 10 plagues that happened against the Egyptians, but none happened against the Israelites. And they begin to complain. They turn out to be a bunch of complainers. The first time they start complaining is in Exodus 14, verses 10 to 12. This is now about 2 or 3 days after God's mighty miracle for Israel's Passover, in which the Egyptians died and they did not. And they start to mumble and grumble against Moses as soon as they see Egypt's mighty army. They forgot about all the miracles that God had done for them. So Exodus 14 and verse 10. Verse 10, he says, as Pharaoh approached with his army, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching right after them. They were terrified, and they cried out to the Eternal. They said to Moses, was it because there was no graves in Egypt that you brought us out here in the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die out here in the desert. Well, in verse 13, Moses tries to calm the people. God moves between Israel and Egypt with a very heavy cloud and a heavy fog of some type for their safety, and he protects Israel. Israel is by the sea, and here come the Egyptians the other way, and they're getting closer and closer. Well, Christ or God comes down with a cloud, and then he brings a strong east wind coming across the Red Sea, and he dried up the sea, and Israel safely escapes. They go across the Red Sea on dry ground. When God finally lifts the cloud, the Egyptians try the same thing, and their army, completely all of the army died. The horses, the chariots, the charioteers, all the footmen, including Pharaoh. Well, it's now a few days later, and Israel is at it a second time. They start complaining, and this is about water. They don't have enough water. So where do we turn? We turn to the very next chapter, chapter 15, verses 22 through 25. Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the desert of Shur. For 3 days, they traveled in the desert without finding water. When they came to Marah, they couldn't drink its water because it was bitter. That's why the place is called Marah. So the people mumbled and grumbled and complained against Moses, saying, what are we to drink, Moses? Okay. Moses cried out to the Eternal, and the Eternal showed him, of all things, a piece of wood. A piece of wood. So Moses threw it in the water, and the water became sweet. Something so simple. Yet God protected them from that. And they allowed them to drink. He allowed them to drink and have plenty of water for their horses and their animals. The third time Israel is complaining is also in the very next chapter, chapter 16. Chapter 16 and verse 2. We're going to starve to death. That's what they're talking about. We're starving to death out here. Verse 2. In the desert, the whole community complained against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, if only we had died by the Eternal's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire congregation. Here they've had several miracles. They've had two other miracles already, and here they're complaining again. The verse 4 and 5, God again comes to their rescue, and the Israelites see it. Well, maybe that'll stop their complaining. Let's find out. Then the Eternal said to Moses, I'll rain bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way, I'll test them to see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day, they're to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days. Verse 6 through 8. Moses and Aaron are now beginning to speak about all the complaining they're having to put up with. So Moses and Aaron said to the Israelites, in the evening, you will know that it was the Eternal who brought you out of Egypt, and in the morning you'll see the glory of the Eternal because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble and complain against us? Moses also said, you will know that it was the Eternal when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread you want in the morning, because he has heard your complaining against him. Who are we? You're not complaining against us, but you're complaining against the Eternal. Well, in verse 12, God assures Israel that they'll have plenty to eat. He says, I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them at twilight you'll eat meat, and in the morning you'll be filled with bread. then you will know that I am the eternal, your God. Hopefully they will know it, but I'm not so sure about that because I know the end of the story. But at least they'll have plenty to eat. Well, in verse 13, we find out that in the evening, God brought lots and lots of quail, and in the morning, they had plenty of manna to eat, just like he said in verse 12. Well, they go on complaining a fourth time. Where do they complain? Well, it's in the very next chapter, chapter 17. They're complaining in chapter 17. Verses 1 through 3. This time is that there's no water at all for the people to drink. It isn't as if it's bad water. There just isn't any water there at all. The whole Israelite community, beginning in verse 1 of chapter 17, set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from the place to place as the Eternal commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they complained with Moses and said, give us water to drink. Moses replied, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Eternal to the test? But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and our livestock die of thirst? Well, what does Moses do? He does the obvious. He turns to the Eternal just like we do in our times of trouble. Moses cried out to the Eternal, what am I to do with these people? They're almost ready to stone me. God gives instructions to Moses, and this is interesting. He says, walk on ahead of the people. Take with you some of the elders of Israel and take in your hand the staff which you struck the Nile and go. I'll stand there before you by the rock of Horeb. Strike the rock and water will come out of it for the people to drink. So Moses did this in the sight of all the elders. You see, he followed God's instructions and water came out. Luke 21 and verse 19, I'm not going to turn there, but Christ explains that in our patience, is where we possess our souls. In our patience, we possess our soul. Not through complaining, not through whining, not through moaning, not through grumbling. We possess our patience, we possess our souls in our patience. Well, the fifth place they're complaining now is Taberah. There's more negative here from the Israelites. And God shows us again that our words really matter to him. This time he's in Numbers 11. Numbers 11, and there's only three verses here, 1, 2, and 3. But they're very important to God. What happens? The first four words say it. Now the people complained. The people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Eternal. Of course, every word we say, God hears it. He knows about the things we say. And when he heard them, his anger was aroused. And what happened? Then fire from the Eternal burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. When the people cried out to Moses, he prayed to the Eternal, and the fire died down. So that place was called Taberah because fire from the Eternal had burned among them. Here we see God was extremely upset with just some casual talk. These people didn't have a job to go to. There were no jobs out there. They didn't have any work to go to. They didn't earn any pay out there. They were there wandering through the desert, and they were being fed by God every morning and every evening. And yet they're still complaining. It's just amazing. And we just see how upset God was about their casual talk. So let's go to Luke 6, verse 37. Here Jesus addresses others. And he's talking to you and me, not the children of Israel out in the desert. He said, do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. That's what complaining is, condemnation for the most part. Forgive, and you'll be forgiven. Verse 38, the last part. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. So how hard we complain can be turned against us. Out at work, there's a saying that's used a lot. The guys use it among themselves. What goes around comes around. So what they're saying, let's be good and kind, and let's have kind words and good words for each other. Let's be kind-hearted to one another. Okay, the sixth time Israel is complaining, believe it or not, is in the very next verse of Numbers 11, verse 4. The rabble with them. So this is the complainers, the noisy, the loud, the whiners, the mosers, and the snivelers crave other food. They weren't happy with the food God was giving them. They didn't have to work for it, but they were complaining about it, and they craved different food. And again, Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We want meat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt, and at no cost. Also the cucumbers. We had lots of cucumbers. Not only that, we had watermelons. Well, we had melons. Watermelons is my favorite, of course. Leeks, onions, and garlic. But now we've lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. They'd already forgotten about all of the beatings they took daily. They forgot about the daily beatings. They forgot about the death of their firstborn who were thrown in the river with a rock tied around their foot so they drowned. That was one of the ways. How many other ways? I don't know. The constant stress of more and more and more brick. The constant comment of faster and faster and faster. We want more brick. And they also forgot that Moses killed an Egyptian for them just for beating a Hebrew. They forgot about all that stuff. All that evil is glossed over because they don't get to eat the kind of foods that they were used to. Well, in verses 10 through 15, Moses here confesses to God all the daily and hourly stress in his life for all the Israelites. And Moses actually asks God to die, beginning in verse 10. Moses heard the people of every family wailing, each at the entrance of his tent. The Eternal became exceedingly angry, and Moses was troubled. They weren't bowing down to any idol. They weren't making an idol. They weren't giving gifts to an idol. They weren't sacrificing to an idol. They were talking and complaining. And God was very displeased with them. And Moses was troubled, and he asked the Eternal, why have you brought this trouble on your servant? What have I done to displease you that you put the burden of all these people upon me? Did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms as a nurse carries an infant? To the land of promise, on oath to their forefathers. Moses was very tired, and this is the sixth time now that they're complaining about things. Where can we get meat for all these people? I can't get meat for them. They keep wailing to me, give us meat. Give us meat to eat. I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. If this is how you're going to treat me, put me to death right now. If I found favor in your eyes, do not let me face my own ruin. Moses is really discouraged. Verse 16, what happens? God provides a fantastic solution. Listen to this. Bring me 70 of Israel's elders who are known to you as leaders and officials among the people. Have them come to the tent of meeting that they may stand there before you. I will come down to speak with you there, and I will take the spirit that is on you and put that spirit on them. They will help you carry the burden of the people so that you will not have to carry it alone. Did that actually happen? Let's check it out in verse 24. What does God say, or what does Moses say? So he went out and told the people what the Eternal had said. He brought together 70 of their elders and had them stand around the tent. Then the Eternal came down in the cloud and spoke with him. And he took of the spirit that was on Moses and put the same spirit on the 70 elders. When the spirit rested upon them, they prophesied. Okay? However, verse 26, and this next four verses is really delightful to read, really delightful in this times of trouble for Moses. Verse 26, however, two men whose names were Eldad and Medad had remained in the camp. They were listed among the elders, but did not go out of their tent. Yet the Spirit of God also rested on them, and they prophesied in camp. Verse 27, a young man ran and told Moses, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. Well, this young man was Joshua, and he speaks up now. Listen to what he says. Joshua, the son of Nun, who had been Moses' aide since his youth, spoke up and said, Moses, my Lord, stop them. Stop them. What does Moses say? Listen to the comforting words that he gives to Joshua. Listen to this. Moses replied, are you jealous, Joshua, for my sake? You jealous for me? I wish that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Eternal would put his spirit on all of them. Then Moses and the elders returned to the camp. That's beautiful at a time when it was needed. So Moses felt so much better, that's for sure. Well, in verse 31, let's get back to our story here. The Eternal provides meat, and the Israelites wanted to eat it so badly. Listen to the penalty, however, and the price the complainers had to pay at the hand of Almighty God. Now the wind came up out from the Eternal and drove quail in from the sea. It brought them down all around the camp, about 3 foot above the ground. That's a lot of quail. As far as a day's walk in any direction, it's a massive amount of quail. All that day and all that night. And the next day, the people went out and gathered quail. No one gathered less than 10 homers. And the margin says that could be about 60 bushel. That's a basket about 30 inches across and probably close to 30 inches high. That is a lot of quail. When they spread them out on the ground all around the camp, but while the meat was still between their teeth and before it could be consumed, listen to this. The anger of the Eternal burned against the people, and he struck them with a severe plague. The world is going through a plague today, by the way, as we all know. Verse 34, therefore the place was named Kibroth Hathaavah, because they buried the people who had craved other food. Do words matter? You bet they do. These negative commands or comments really bothered God. Not only did Israel complain about the meat they eat, after God gave them the meat, they were not even grateful. You don't see anyone saying thank you for God for doing this for them. They just didn't come out and we're not grateful. Now, the seven times now, the complaining is going on. This time it's much different, however. This time now, it's Moses' brother Aaron and his sister complaining. This again is in the next chapter. Moses really had his hands full. Now it's coming from his family and nobody else. Miriam, his older sister, and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. She would be an Ethiopian. Has the Eternal spoken only through Moses? Has the Eternal spoken only through Moses, they asked? Hasn't he also spoken through us? And the Eternal heard this comment. Now, what does God think about Moses? Verse 3 says, Moses was a very humble man, more humble than anyone else on the face of the earth. You can use the word meekness in there as well. Humble and meek represent the same thing. Verse 4, God's response to Miriam. At once, the Eternal said to Moses, Aaron and Miriam, come out to the tent of meeting, all three of you. So the three of them came out. Then the Eternal came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the entrance of the tent and summoned Aaron and Miriam. When both of them stepped forward, he said, listen to my words, you two. When a prophet of the Eternal is among you, I reveal myself to him in visions. In visions. But this is not true of my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak face to face, clearly and not in riddles. He even sees the form of the Eternal. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? At this point, about Moses' wife Miriam, may well have started when God appointed the 70 elders in chapter 11. There may have been some jealousy going on here. Miriam was a prophetess, according to Barnes' notes, as well as the first lady of Israel. So she had quite a bit of prominence. Now, the 70 elders whom God appointed in the last chapter to assist Moses could have lowered her ranking a little bit among the brethren, among the Israelites, and with her brother as well. They may both have been a bit jealous. And now both of them are about to see the revenge of God. And Moses' wife could have been completely and totally innocent. Verses 9 through 12. The anger of the Eternal burned against them, and he left. When the cloud lifted from above the tent, there stood Miriam, leprous, like snow. Aaron turned toward her and saw that she had leprosy. And he said to Moses, please, my Lord, do not hold against us the sin we have so foolishly committed. Do not let her be like a stillborn infant coming from its mother's womb with its flesh half eaten away. Moses cried out to the Eternal, please, God, please heal her. The Eternal replied to Moses, if her father had spit in her face, would she not have been in disgrace for 7 days? Confine her outside the camp for 7 days. After that, she can be brought in. See, this was God's response not only to Miriam, but to Moses. God was upset because of the way that his leader was being treated. John talks about, or James talks about the tongue. And he says in James 3 and verse 6, our tongue is also a fire, a world among evil among the parts of our body. The tongue corrupts the whole person and sets the whole course for a life on fire. I want to close by a comment that Mark Welsh wrote about Pentecost coming up. He said, as God's people, we want to be good listeners and listen to each other speak and try not to monopolize the conversation. Leave room for each other person to speak. Be positive and enthusiastic with others. That sounds like John Visser to me. That comes from Mark Welsh. Brethren, happy Sabbath and a happier Pentecost to everyone.